Today we're going to continue with the sermon series that's taken from the second chapter of the book, The Prophesied End Time. Today is part three of the series that has the same title as chapter two, which is The Seventh Seal. The Seventh Seal, part three. There are things we're just going to talk about as we come to them in the book at points, at certain points here, but there are some scriptures we're going to spend a little more time in the beginning, but later on there'll be a lot of reading, but I will comment on some of the scriptures because there are a lot of scriptures quoted in this particular section as we go along. And again, brethren, I hope we understand the importance of having these things deeply embedded in our minds, and because it's everything about preparing for what we're getting ready to go into. It really is. And the more firmly these things are embedded in our minds, the better equipped we will be to deal with and for God to build things upon what we've already been given, to build upon that foundation of some of the things we've already been preparing for and what God has been giving to us. And so it is a building process, and the strength, the encouragement, the boldness we need to have as time goes along, that all comes from this foundation being very firmly embedded in us. So again, beginning in page 43, in the middle of the page, we'll just back up a couple of paragraphs here to where we were at the end of last week's sermon. And that would be in the middle of the page here now. We'll catch back up here. But I did want to cover something I didn't have time for last Sabbath. We'll begin reading there then in the middle of page 43. God declares, "And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth." And as we brought out, there are different things here, that there are times there are things that are literal. Sometimes there are those things that are a matter of not to be taken specifically literally, but here as just like clothed in sackcloth, there are different things that are given as a type of something else in that respect. This isn't a physical thing, but it's a type of something that's spiritual in their lives, and frankly, should be in all of our lives, always. But all the more so during this period of time, which is a matter of humility. Fasting is a matter of humility, and sackcloth was used for a time of fasting in the Old Testament. There was a way that, they just like Job, you read about the story of Job and what he went through, and it's symbolic of that which is in their life, a matter of a symbolism. Going on here, these two will prophesy of events that are coming, and their message will be reinforced by the power of God Almighty through signs and miracles, mostly in the form of plagues and control over weather. By this means, God will be revealing that these two are His witnesses and that it is the end time, the end of man's 6,000-year reign on the earth. These two will be of a humble spirit, again going back to that, spiritually clothed in sackcloth, unlike those in the world around them. For they know the suffering man must experience in order to become changed in spirit. They also know that what will happen is not about them, but rather about God, or about what God is doing to bring His kingdom to this earth. Then in Revelation 11, verse 4 here, this is quoted. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. These two do stand in an awesomely prominent position of power. They exercise power over the earth that no human beings have ever exercised before, not even remotely. Moses announced great plagues on Pharaoh and Egypt, but nothing in comparison to the magnitude of those things done by these two prophets. And so, brethren, I thought it'd be good to back up here a little bit, or just to stop here a little bit, because I did want to focus on this section here a little bit more. This has not been focused upon much by the church in times past. There really wasn't a need, but we're entering a time where this is going to become more important. And we're rapidly approaching a time, again, where this is going to be focused upon as far as the world is concerned. But we need to think about those things as well and where we're headed, because it's a part of what we're a part of. It's something that we're going to be associated with one way or another. Again, it says here, these are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. You know, sometimes we read right over things and we don't think about the impact of what's being said. And in reality, when this takes place, this is a very powerful thing that's being stated by God. It is an awesome thing. And if we can grasp the awesomeness and the importance even more so in different ways, we see it in many different scriptures, but if we can grasp what God is telling us about a specific phase of time and have it come at us in different ways and be magnified over and over again in different ways, this is one of those ways. Because if we can grasp how important this is and what God has to say about it, and that we're a part of this in our lives and what's going to be said later on, because what God has given to us by knowledge, by understanding, are the very things that are going to be stated out here as far as what's taking place in the world, where we are in time, what God is doing. It's kind of interesting here when you look at these words, What does this mean that they are, these lampstands or these two olive trees are standing before the God of the earth? It literally means here in the Greek language that they are made to stand. In other words, God is the one that is making them to stand. The word literally has to do with standing firm, steadfast, standing fast. And so it is God who makes them to stand. He is the one who establishes, as this word means in the Greek, establishes them, that they stand fast. Again, how this word is used in the Greek. To accomplish the job he's given them to do. And we're all going to be a part of that one way or another, brethren, in the sense of what we're doing, in the sense of what we believe, in the sense of what we're telling others, in the sense of what they're going to be able to receive through us, the encouragement, the strength, the truth. The truth is a very powerful thing, especially at this time, because very few in times past, in 6,000 years, have ever been able to latch on to the truth, because it wasn't given to them. Because God has to draw you, God has to work with you, God has to have decided He's going to draw you and give you understanding. So He has to do the drawing by the power of His Holy Spirit. He decided He was going to work with Abraham. And so He began to give Abraham understanding through the power of the Holy Spirit. He determined different ones He was going to work with in different times. Just like David. He chose David very early on to replace Saul, King Saul. And so He began to work with David at a very young age. We don't know what age God begins to work with people when He begins to draw us, what He determines to do. But when He begins to do that, that's the only way and the only time that someone can understand what is true. Only by that capacity, because the capacity is not in human beings. It has to come from God. So over 6,000 years, it's an incredible thing to grasp and understand that very few have ever been given the ability to know the truth. But now we're entering into a time, to me, that's getting more and more exciting in the sense of realizing the transition. The transition is going to have incredible emotion associated with it, because it's going to be awesomely difficult and harsh and hard on one side in the sense of suffering. But on the other side, brethren, to understand the fruit of it, the purpose of it, the excitement that here, finally, God is opening up the minds of thousands and millions and letting them be drawn by the power of His Holy Spirit to a new age, to a new time, to a new world. And they're going to be given the capacity to understand the truth. And so many cases, brother, we're going to have the opportunity to share that with people, which we don't comprehend yet. We don't grasp that fully yet, because we have never experienced this in God's church in this magnitude. It's never been done in the world in 6,000 years like this, to where people by the thousands are going to begin to be drawn to the truth. That's something that really kind of amazes me, and I feel like God's given that to us as an encouragement right now, of something that is encouraging. I was really geared toward expecting mostly negative things coming from the book. I was really geared toward an onslaught of criticism, of attack. And I've marveled at some of these people we've talked to. Now, the only ones that generally have something they really want to attack you quickly on are some people, obviously, that have a religious bent, you know, in Protestantism, traditional Christianity. That's a little different. But when you get the average person out here, the average individual in the world that doesn't have that axe to grind, in most cases doesn't even want to talk about religion as a whole, it's amazing the response of some of these people, just like this last week here, then this interview with the individual in Colorado Springs. Sometimes I'm in awe. And I also understand that God gives the favor. God gives the favor. Because they hear something in the background. I wish I could remember what he was saying as he was hanging up the phone to me, but I could still hear a little bit. They cut you off at a certain point in time there, and then you hear a little bit more before you're totally cut off. They have two switches or whatever. One is a switch to where you can't speak anymore. You generally hear that. If you're listening to interviews on there, you can generally tell that. The other is when they cut the radio station, the feed that's coming into me anyway, where they actually hang up. So I heard him cut me off before the producer then, I guess that's how it would work, would actually hang up the phone. And again, I don't remember the words that were used, but talking about in a very positive way about, you know, he seemed like a very likable individual or a very likable person or something like that, you know. And, you know, you think, why does he feel that way just by a short conversation? Well, God is the one that can give favor, brethren, and he'll give you favor in things you do as time goes along in very difficult times. And so sometimes all the negative things we prepare for, that's good in one respect, so we can be prepared, but I think we're going to be in awe of the favor that God gives to us as time goes along, because there's a job to do. And we all have work to do. If we'll yield it and hold on and hold fast, because this is a two-way street, God helping us in that respect, because all of us are part of that. To hold fast, if we're holding fast, if we have a desire, we're crying out to God to help us to stand fast. There are different verses in the Scripture that talk about the need to do that, and especially in the New Testament, to stand fast and to be steadfast in this way of life. God will make us to stand fast through the difficult times. He truly will. He'll make us to stand. He'll establish us very powerfully so and give us great favor. So I find that very encouraging, brethren, when we think about things like that. So again, I wonder if we, and I know we can't fully because we haven't experienced this yet, if we even begin to grasp, even in a very small way, what God has placed before us or what we're a part of at this end time. Brother, I hope we're starting to get a sense of how awesome this is, of where we are, and what God has given us opportunity of. There have never been people in times past in 6,000 years who have had the opportunity like we've been given. They long for this time. It talks about that in Hebrews, about those who have lived by faith, who longed for this time. And we long for getting on with it, because it's so much a part of our minds right now. And we feel we're ready. And then when we get there, we probably wish we had more time, you know. But right now, the attitude of mind really is one of, let's get on with it. Let's do it. Let's get through this and get into that kingdom and get on with the kingdom, a new world. And I don't think that's by coincidence, brethren, that we're of that same mind, of that same spirit, that God is sharing that with us, that we're getting closer, and He wants us to be of that mind. To go on, let's go on, let's do it, let's get it accomplished, let's get it fulfilled, and let's do the work that's in front of us. And we're anxious for that. We're desirous of that. I feel as I talk to people that more and more people are desirous of that and yielding themselves to the process. The waiting is a killer. Now, there are people who have waited. They waited all their lives and never saw this time, obviously. They look forward to it because so often they were given by the power of the Spirit to show, to be known, just like Paul, different ones, to know that it wasn't for their time. Abraham had to know it wasn't for his time because he knew a nation was going to come out of him. It wouldn't happen in his lifetime, but he longed for this time, God's kingdom to come. And so I marvel at that we're blessed of all people to live at this time, to have the opportunity of doing things that others would love to. In times past, the prophets of old, the apostles, different ones in the church in the past 2,000 years would loved to have lived in your time. They truly would. They would love to have had the opportunity to live in your time to experience what you get to experience. And we don't even grasp yet what we're going to get to experience. And so today we're going to look at some verses that I mentioned a few months ago that we'd come back to and discuss later on. I didn't know when that later on would be, but this is only a part of it. It's only a part of the story, not all of it. But this is a part of it today we're going to begin to address. And at another time in the future, I'm sure we're going to go more deeply into the rest of it. But first, we need to grasp the significance and the importance of the time in which we live. And if we grasp some of these things being said here about this specific time, I think it'll move us even more so. Let's go back and start first here in Revelation chapter 1. Revelation chapter 1. The whole book of Revelation, it starts out by beginning with a story which is incredible indeed by itself, because everything points to this time. Everything points up to the time we're getting ready to go into, the end of an age. That's what Revelation is about. And it talks about those things that are given by, frankly, by God the Father through Jesus Christ to John, that it is the testimony, it is the witness of God the Father and Jesus Christ that's given to them. And it talks about seven churches. So the stage is set. As it says in verse 4 of chapter 1, John to the seven churches. So the stage is set for that which is going to be discussed, because not quite 2,000 years by the time this is written, but 1,900 years for certain, and all a period of time that must go by before these things begin to be fulfilled, very powerfully so. But there's going to be that which happens in the church. And then it builds up to events that take place at the very end, in the transition from man's government, man's ways of 6,000 years to God's ways. It's like the end of Friday, and all of a sudden we're getting closer to the Sabbath, you know, and the beginning of a different period of time, and we're right there. And then finally, down in verse 12, it says, John speaking, and he said, "And I turned to see the voice that spoke unto me, And being turned, I saw seven golden candlesticks. And in the midst of the seven golden candlesticks, one like unto the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the foot, and clothed with a garment down to the feet, and girded about the chest with a golden band. So again, here it's speaking about these seven golden candlesticks, which we know are the churches. It's speaking about the churches. And in the midst of these seven churches is Jesus Christ. Because He's walked through this entire period of time. He's lived through this period of time. That's been His work for 2,000 years. That's why I love the example on atonement in Leviticus 16 of when He went to the Father, when the high priest went into the holiest of holies, He didn't come out again until His work was finished inside there. And that's been Jesus Christ for 2,000 years. Then when He comes out and His house has been sanctified, as it talks about back there in Leviticus 16, then that's a period of time when God's kingdom comes, when He returns. And so He has been working. God the Father has been working in a very powerful way, in a magnified way, more so than what took place in the first 4,000 years, because there were far more called, far more worked with on a grander scale during the last 2,000 years than during the first 4,000 years through the church. And so it goes on to say here, so this is what it's picturing here, Jesus Christ in the midst of all seven, being there from beginning to end. His head and His hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and His eyes were as a flame of fire, and His feet like unto fine brass, as if they burned in a furnace, and His voice as the sound of many waters. And He had in His right hand seven stars, and out of His mouth went a sharp two-edged sword, and His countenance was as the sun shines in His strength. So again, a spirit appearance, something we'll never be able to see as physical human beings. No physical human being can see this. But spirit can see this. So it was manifested something He was able to see, not literally, but something He was able to see to describe this in physical terms. Going on in verse 17. And when I saw Him, I fell at His feet as dead. And He laid His right hand upon me, saying, Fear not, I am the first and the last. I am He that lives and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. Amen. And have the keys of hell and of death. In other words, of the grave and of death. And so it's through Jesus Christ that we're able to be forgiven of sin so that we can, through God's plan of salvation, become a part of the God family. And so that's why this is mentioned. Verse 19, write the things which you have seen and the things which are and the things which shall be hereafter. So here's just the beginning of the book. And so everything he's to see at this point in time in this state, whatever the state was that John had, he's being told by Jesus Christ, write these things down. Now, we know there's one area where he's told not to write. And that's an awesome thing to understand as well. Speaking of seven thunders. But he said here in this here that there are things he was to write of those things that would take place hereafter. And really, it all leads up to, it's all geared toward the time he's going to return. A second time as King of Kings. A transition in time. Verse 20. The mystery of the seven stars which you saw in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. And the seven candlesticks which you saw are the seven churches. So, again here, we see this symbolism of something that, candidly, it comes out of the Old Testament. It comes out of some prophecies in the Old Testament as well. These candlesticks, that's how we would picture it today. It talks about the lamps and the oil and so forth that's there, and the light there and that feeds it. A little bit different than what we normally think of. But again, here, same symbolism here in that respect, but there are seven of them here. In the midst of all seven was Jesus Christ during the last 2,000 years. That's the message. And preparing a people, preparing for a time when he's going to return. And anyway, it talks about a message that later on here that was to go to then seven churches, and they're told what they were going to live through, what their trials would be, what their weaknesses would be, what their strengths would be at different times here. There are things that they were given admonition for because it was all pre-planned, things that God had planned and prepared long ago, knowing what man would do under various kinds of conditions and so forth, knowing what man would do when the Catholic Church very early on began to come after them and what it would be like when they had to flee for their lives and go underground for a long time in that respect. So some incredible things that the church has gone through. Let's turn back now to Zechariah chapter 3. Now, Zechariah, brethren, sometimes in the Old Testament especially, whether it be, it doesn't matter which of the prophets it might be, there are some things that speak specifically to events and things that are taking place literally at that time in their lives, or things that were going to take place in a lot of instances there. So they bring in actual events that are actually taking place, as does Zechariah here. And then there are things that all of a sudden may be a prophecy about Christ. Maybe one verse in the context of a whole bunch of verses. All the other verses may have to do with specifically what's going on. And then all of a sudden there's a verse about Jesus Christ. There are places like that. Then Psalms. So you read things like that, and we need to understand that, because sometimes people make a mistake of trying to go back and read everything in the flow of what's just like Revelation. If you try to go through the flow of Revelation without understanding basic truths about God, and look what we've done, you know, look what the church has gone through. There are things we can't know, you know, that we sometimes try to work out of an understanding by our own understanding, and it doesn't work that way. So just like here, there are some literal physical events, but if you go back and try to read it all as literal events and they're all spiritual, you're making a big mistake. But we're going to plug into an area here that has to do with things that leave a point that Zechariah is addressing here to some very specific things having to do with the future that are prophetic. Zechariah 3, verse 8. Hear now, O Joshua, you the high priest, you, and your fellows that sit before you, for they are men wondered at. Now, we're breaking into a thing here where it's breaking away from some of the story, and it's going to begin focusing in the future. And a lot of these things, even the names of individuals here, are symbolic. And sometimes they don't just have one meaning. Sometimes they may have many. I think of the word for Zerubbabel here, and how Mr. Armstrong began to understand that there were things given to him that were similar to that which was given to Zerubbabel. Well, that's happened at different times in history, not just in his time. It depends on what a person has been given, because through time, Jesus Christ, especially if you look at the church over the last 2,000 years, if you look at the work that's been taking place within the seven church eras, and Jesus Christ there the entire time, there are individuals at different times who have been raised up by God to do specific things and working with the church. And their function has been to see something start and something be finished as far as their lifespan was concerned. And so we're going to see that here as we go along. And so it says here, again, and your fellows that sit before you, for they are men wondered at the world. There are things that have happened through time, especially as people begin to understand, that people are in awe of. This word wonder means there's a wonderment, if you will, that which you look upon something and you're in awe of it. You don't necessarily have answers, but you wonder, how can this be? How is this possible? And there are different events that have happened through time. I think of our time. There are going to be things that take place that the world is going to wonder at. That those who begin to be drawn by God's Spirit, they're going to be in awe of, they're going to wonder at, and they're going to begin to believe, and they're going to look forward to the return of Jesus Christ. I think of Israel in particular, those who come through all this. And to me, that's an exciting thing to know and to understand, that there will be so many people who are looking forward to being saved, looking forward to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, because they come to a point in time where they know that's their only hope. And they begin to believe some things because of what they see, because they know no man can do things that are taking place besides everything else that's going on. It says, behold, I will bring forth my servant the branch. So again, talking about some things having to do with Jesus Christ. Things that the world will come in awe of because they think they know Jesus Christ. I think of traditional Christianity. I think of some of those radio things, and you talk to people, you have people call in. The world is so awesomely ignorant. The world has no concept of what Jesus Christ is like. Only those in the church, only those who have had association in the past, those who have been a part of the church, only those have any kind of capacity at all of understanding Jesus Christ, of what he's been doing, of the truth about him in the very, very early on, and those things are going to take place in the future. The world has no concept because they've heard the name, but it's not Jesus Christ that they've heard about. And so, again here, it goes on to say, for behold, verse 9, the stone that I have laid before Joshua, upon one stone shall be seven eyes. Behold, I will engrave the graving thereof, says the Eternal of hosts, and I will remove the iniquity of the land in one day. You know, this is saying a lot in a short period of time here. It's talking about the power of God's Spirit, how it's going to move on the earth. That's what it's discussing. And it leads up to a time of one day, he said. There is one day coming, and it is a literal day. It was brought up recently here, and this might be a good place to bring some of this, just to mention this at least, because people have come along at different times in the fellowship, that of those things spoken of in Revelation, when the seven last plagues are poured out, in some of our, well, I don't know if it's in the literature necessarily because I haven't gone back and looked at it, but I think it's mentioned at times like that. But I know I've heard sermons like that, that one day, the day of the Lord, is spoken of as being 1 year long. But if you go back and look at when we started looking at some of the timelines for that last 3.5 years on some of those old charts, and it talked about when Europe would arise during the fifth seal rather than the fifth trumpet on the seventh seal, and we had a kind of a conflict of some things. Well, we spoke of some of those, that timeline, but you'll notice on those old charts, there was one particular one in one of the booklets that had that period of time where it wasn't specific. And I can't remember the exact words, but it was like an undetermined amount of time. In other words, we didn't really know. How long? Was it a year? Was it several months? Was it 30 days? Was it 45 days? Was it? It's been hard for us to believe it could happen in one day. That's the point. It's been very hard for us to believe that the seven last plagues could take place in one day. It's been very hard for people to believe that God could come back, resurrect at the very beginning of that day, resurrect everyone who has been dead in Christ as a part of the 144,000, and those who are still alive to be resurrected on that same day, just a little bit later after the great resurrection, and then those who are alive, they're changed, and all 144,000 all of a sudden in that one day, and then the seven last plagues poured out in that one day. And so that's why some people have gotten caught up in things about some are resurrected 45 days before and some 90 days before and 30 days before and all the way back to Pentecost before, and because it's hard for the human mind to believe that God can accomplish this. But God says what He means what He says. And He'll do it in one day. See, because we can't comprehend with our puny little human brains how all of a sudden we could know what we need to do on that one day. Don't we have to have some classes? Don't we need to have some time so that God can give us some instruction, set in a classroom type of environment, the 144,000, and maybe set up there for a few months to get our heads straight so we can know what we need to do as soon as we go back down with Him when He returns? This is going to take some time. The power of God Almighty through the power of His Spirit. When you're a spirit being, you'll have the capacity of receiving anything and everything God puts in your mind and all be at one at one moment, and you will be in awe of it. That's the power of God Almighty when you're a spirit being and have a capacity of a spirit being, because you're not just a spirit being. You are a part of the God family. And so when God communicates to you through His Spirit, gives you that Spirit on that plane, you will know. It will be in your mind as much as when you were called, except on a much greater scale. When you were called and all of a sudden your mind was opened up to the Sabbath and you knew it without going to Scriptures. When you believed, when you heard about things about the migrations of Israel and where they went, the lost 10 tribes, and you believed it without looking in Scriptures. When you believed about the holy days before you ever looked at Scriptures. If that's how it happened to you, because that's how it happened to me. And all of a sudden you believe it because God puts it in your mind. But we just don't have a whole lot of capacity in physical human minds. But being a God, a member of the God family, there are no restrictions. So people, human beings, when they look at these things, it's difficult for them. How can this all happen in one day? We do not grasp the correction, the chastening that God's going to pour out on the earth, as He says, on those who destroy the earth in one day. Because it's going to happen all over places in Europe. It's going to happen all over the Far East. It's going to happen throughout the Middle East, where those seven last plagues are poured out very powerfully so to bring the world to its knees finally. Because you see, Europe and the Far East and those nations that come together out of Asia, they're coming together to do battle in Megiddo. And so God destroys that army, but He also destroys so much of their homeland of where they came from in that same day. Their peoples, the people who support them, the people who are destroying the earth, He destroys in one day. That's what this is all about. So God, can God do it? Absolutely. And so that's what He's showing here. When it comes down to a transition and Jesus Christ comes again and stands on the Mount of Olives in that day, before that day is over with, this is a part of what's being discussed here. And I will remove the iniquity of that land in one day. A transition in time where all of a sudden that which destroys the earth, God destroys. That's what's being discussed here. And all of a sudden, those who are able to come into a new world have the ability to receive God's Spirit. It won't happen overnight. It's going to take some time. It'll happen in a very massive way with people coming out of Israel, with their background, out of Judah, with their background. They'll be able to receive it quickly. People of Hinduism, Buddhism, others, it's going to take maybe a little longer, you know. It's going to take some time. But there are going to be some who've already been prepared for quite a while before this happens. And so, it goes on in verse 10, "In that day, says the Eternal of Hosts, shall you call every man his neighbor under the vine and under the fig tree." And so this is even understood as being a time spoken of a millennial period. That's what they're called to. And this is symbolic of being called to the truth, of being called to the millennium, of being called to a new world, of a new age, of 1,000 years of the reign of Jesus Christ on the earth. That's what this is all symbolic of. That's what this is talking about. Everyone now has been called to that. They're going to have that opportunity in this world when this world comes. Going on now in chapter 4, because the flow continues. It isn't broken up by chapters here. "And the angel that talked with me came again and awakened me as a man that is awakened out of his sleep. Speaking it right now, I have chills going up and down my spine, because that was our state, brethren." Do you know that? We had to be awakened out of a spiritual sleep. This is a very specific moment in time of something that's taking place. Very powerfully so. Very symbolic in that respect. Read it again. "And the angel that talked with me came again and awakened me as a man that is awakened out of his sleep." See, it's not the same. It's something different. But it's like someone who's awakened out of a sleep. So what are you talking about? Were you asleep and you were awakened out of your sleep? Or is it like being awakened out of a sleep? What is it then? It's spiritual. Being asleep spiritually, we had to be awakened. "And said unto me, what do you see? And I said, I have looked, and behold, a candlestick all of gold with a bowl upon the top of it, and his 7 lamps thereon, and the 7 pipes to the 7 lamps. The 7 golden candlesticks, as it's quoted back there in Revelation chapter 1 that we just read. It's the same thing. And this is what they're seeing. This is what's being seen right now. "Which are upon the top thereof, and 2 olive trees by it, one on the right side of the bowl, and the other on the left side thereof." Brethren, can we even begin to grasp what we're being told of how important this transition in time and what we're getting ready to be a part of is all about? Because this is what we're discussing. Something that's pictured in symbolism right beside all 7 church eras. Because this is when it finally comes to a head and finally comes to a close. All that God has been working with for literally 6,000 years to finally bring a new age and a new world. And there is that which God is getting ready to do to reveal Himself to the world. God has not done that in 6,000 years, but to a few. And He truly didn't fully reveal Himself even to Israel, even though that's kind of what we think sometimes. We go back and read about things about Israel. You start thinking about that. Did He truly reveal Himself powerfully on a continuing basis? No, He did not. Even with Moses, it was very limited. But Moses had a great job to do, and He called him with a specific purpose of something to accomplish. And so you can think, well, when the 10 Commandments were given, and even that, they got a little bit of thunder and lightning and a few other things, and some people died, and they didn't want any more of that. So the human mind is an amazing thing. But that's getting ready to come to a screeching halt, because that's what God is getting ready to do over a period of 3.5 times, is to begin to reveal to the world that He is God, that He exists, that He is bringing an end to 6,000 years, and that indeed His government is about to come. It's an exciting time for God, for the family of God, for the angelic realm, and for us, brethren. It's truly an exciting time of what we're getting ready to go into. And how far away is it? You hear the news this past week? Al-Qaeda and Iran, but Al-Qaeda and some of the things they're saying, and different sources saying they have nukes. They're actually looking for a border crossing in Mexico. This is a government looking for this. That they're actually tracking people through Mexico because they feel like they're trying to bring them in there? Or do they already have them in because they already ship them in containers? Brethren, it's going to happen. It's going to happen in major cities. And we are so incredibly close to that. When will that day be? I don't know yet. But you're going to be sobered from the top of your head to the bottom of your toes when it starts happening, because when it starts happening and shaking the earth, it will thunder out powerfully, brethren. It truly will. But that's where we are in time. And we go forward in faith in those things. And everything that God has ever led us in, brethren, that's all it is. That's everything. And that's indeed what it should be. So it goes on to say here, "And two olive trees, verse 3, by it, one on the right side of the bowl and the other on the left side thereof. So I answered and spoke to the angel that talked with me, saying, What are these, my Lord? What is all this?" Well, as so many, so often in some of these things, it's not answered immediately, directly, and even some of it isn't answered real clearly, except of where you are and when you are in time and what when God reveals. Verse 5, "Then the angel that talked with me answered and said unto me, Know you not what these be?" I think of Daniel when we read Daniel 12. It goes back and forth. It's not direct. It goes back and forth. So much is left so people can have their own interpretation and come up with all kinds of ideas of things. And that's not how it works. Just like the Sabbath, God has to give it. And so he says, "Don't you know what these be?" And I said, "No, my Lord." Verse 6, "Then he answered and spoke unto me, saying, This is the word of the Eternal unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit, says the Eternal of hosts." And we've always known that as God's people. God's people have always known this, that whatever is accomplished isn't done by human efforts. We're blessed to be a part of it, and we must put our all into it, whatever that is, brethren, and strive to do that, and strive to live a certain way of life, and strive to do whatever God shows us needs to be accomplished at whatever time in the last 6,000 years you want to see that God has worked with individuals. But a very powerful message has always been one, that God is the one who does it. And I'll tell you what, at the end of the age here, God is going to make that even more abundantly clear. Because you see, even when we were only up to 150,000 people, counting all children, we came big in our own minds. We became too big in our own minds. We truly did, spiritually. And God whittled us down to size. We have major lessons to learn from that. We had major lessons to learn from that. And so God is showing us and teaching us some things that can be used for teaching throughout the millennium and throughout the great white throne in a very powerful way. And so God has made it clear through time. That's why when you read stories, they're so astounding of things that God did through time. You realize man has been called to be a part to share in it. And when we're faithful, we're able to partake of that and share of it. But God's the one who does it all. And anything that has any significance whatsoever, anything that lasts, anything that has purpose in it, God is the one who does it. We're just awesomely blessed to be a part of sharing in that. "Not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit, says the Eternal of hosts. Who are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel you shall become a plain." In essence, what is it that can stand before God? What government? Nothing in the world can, not even in the church, because we did. We got to that point, and worldwide. We truly did. It doesn't matter what it be. Nothing can stand against God. When God's going to accomplish something, it may seem like, what hope? What can be done now? That's why so many have plans for things that are going to take literally some decades to accomplish, because they're going to, their ideas to become so large as an organization. That's why some say there hasn't been a falling away in the church yet, at least not the prophesied one, because that happened and it was a big one, but there's something greater coming yet in the future. But to accomplish that, leaders understand, and brethren, hopefully, of those understand as well, that hear those things, that they have to become very large, much larger than what we ever were in worldwide, to accomplish something that you could call a great falling away, an apostasy. And we marvel at that. We do, because God has shown us what is true in those matters, that that was the apostasy. But you feel for the human mind, when the human mind has pride in it and can't accept certain things, and how stubborn we are as human beings, even with, even once we even receive God's Spirit, what we can be like. So nothing, in essence, and this is the message here, nothing can stand before God. God's going to accomplish it by His power. His plan is going to work out exactly as He said. Every era of the church has been exactly the way God said it would be. Everything that needed to be accomplished was exactly as God said it would be, in a nutshell, when He spoke to the seven churches. So before Zerubbabel you shall become a plain, and he shall bring forth the headstone thereof with shoutings, crying, grace, grace unto it. You know, some things here symbolic of the work of Jesus Christ. That's what it's talking about, of what he's going to accomplish. Again, amongst the seven candlesticks. Because that's the setting here of what's being discussed. And so it is symbolic here, talking about those things that Jesus Christ would accomplish and what he would do. And nothing would stand before him. What God had purposed for him to accomplish and his great plan was going to be accomplished. Jesus Christ would do it. Nothing could stand against him in that respect. Going on, verse 8. Moreover, the word of the Eternal came unto me, saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. You remember the high priest and why he went in to the holiest of holies? And then when he came out, symbolic here of Jesus Christ, his hands shall also finish it. The seven churches has been his primary work. When you're talking about a group of people who are brought into one body, the church, the body of Christ, that's what we're called. The body of Christ, the church of God. And we've been blessed over the last 2,000 years, those who have been a part of that body. He started it. He is the one that has been given to in that respect. And the church taught that it's through him that we're able to become a part of the God family. And that entire process then of cleansing us and purifying us and blessing us in a relationship with God so that he and the Father could dwell within us and we could dwell within them. This is what's being discussed here. That he is the one who has laid the foundation and he will finish it. And when it's finished, there is a massive resurrection when it's God's time. When it's all finished and it's time, then there'll be a massive resurrection. And they'll come back with him to reign. That's what this is talking about. In that one day, the world's going to change. In that one day, from man's to God's, God takes control. In one day. There's a lot that leads up to it in 3.5 years. But he takes control in one day. And the kingdom comes in one day. So again here, reading verse 9. And their hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation. Now there have been people who have been a type of this, as I mentioned earlier. Mr. Armstrong was a type of this because of what he did in the church. And the church being raised up. And the work he did in the church. And different ones through time. Some cases in certain eras, like Thyatira, there are many individuals as the church passed down through time, over 1,000 years of time during that one church era, the longest of them all. And individuals were raised up, and the work they were given to do, they had a job to do with that generation. And when that was finished, they were all a type of something that Jesus Christ did the entire time amongst all seven candlesticks. So again, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. His hands shall also finish it. And you shall know that the Eternal of hosts has sent me unto you. For who has despised the day of small things? You know, God does it by his power. Who was Abraham? Who was Moses? Who was Joshua? Who was Gideon? It doesn't matter what time period you look at. Never big and large and great in the world. It truly wasn't. As far as the world was concerned, they're not. They're mentioned because God has called them, but they weren't the great nations of the earth, the great kingdoms of the earth that are mentioned in Daniel, that were going to arise at different times, the one of gold, you know, the one of brass. Israel was never that. Israel was small as a people. Small in comparison to the others. Little in comparison to the others. For who has despised the day of small things? But it's the way God has chosen to work. Why? Because it's not by might and not by power, but by his Spirit. By his power that things are accomplished. And the earth has to know that. The earth is going to be shown that. For they shall rejoice and shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven. With those seven? What are you talking about? And you want to talk about a measuring line? You want to talk about something that's used to measure? I think about some other verses back here in Revelation that talk about when the temple is measured. You know, when it's finished, it's finished. And he's the one that's going to finish it. In essence, the Father and Jesus Christ, through Jesus Christ, that's what's shown here. God gives Jesus Christ, he's the focal point of his plan, and all these things being accomplished throughout all this. Going to return as King of Kings. So this is some of what's being talked about. And these are the eyes of the Eternal, which run to and fro throughout the whole earth. It's by the power of God's Spirit, by the power of what God does and what He brings to pass. Verse 11, "Then answered I and said unto him," because it wasn't answered yet, brethren. So he answered some other things and told again what was taking place. 7,000 years, Jesus Christ is the one to accomplish it. And who will despise? I think of our time. You know, there have been different times people have lived in. And because of what we experienced at one time with 150,000, and now it's easy to say, you got to be nuts. It's easy for us to question ourselves sometimes. That's why I tell you to go back to the trunk of the tree. Go back to those things that God has given in the last 7 years. And then we know. Because we recognize it's of God's Spirit. It's just the way it works. But sometimes we have to do that because it is something of disbelief. It's a wonder to us. How much more of the world, you know, when they come to see things come to pass? If we're in awe and sometimes even have doubt and wonder, do you? Am I the Lone Ranger? We all have to battle that at times. That's why so often we've gone back to telling you what you've got to go back to, those 18 truths. And so often then the things that you know that others and other groups, they won't see, won't acknowledge, won't admit. How can you know it and they don't? It's something of God's Spirit. And you receive encouragement and strength for that and boldness from that because it's of God's Spirit then. And so this is a part of the story here. So we come back to it. Verse 11. "Then answered I and said unto him, What are these two olive trees upon the right side of the candlestick and upon the left side thereof?" Here is Jesus Christ in the midst of all seven, but what are these two on the sides? Because that's what God is bringing the earth to, brethren, this time. That's what it's symbolic of. It's a power. It's symbolic of all the power and the might that God's going to pour out upon the earth and reveal. He's going to begin to reveal Himself to mankind, to bring mankind to know that He is God and that He's working on the earth and that something great is about to take place. Whether you believe it or not is immaterial. It's coming and it's almost here. Verse 12, "And I answered again and said unto him, What be these two olive branches, which through the two golden pipes empty the golden oil out of themselves? And he answered me and said, Know you not what these be? And I said, No, my Lord. Then said he, These are the two anointed ones that stand by the Lord of the whole earth." It's said just a little bit differently, but it means exactly the same thing as what we just read back in Revelation. When it talks about the two witnesses. Brethren, it's an awesome thing. And if we can understand then, there's something that God has given in a symbolic way, clear back in the book of Zechariah, that pictures our time, that pictures the time we're getting ready to go into, that it is an awesome event. In the midst of it all, in the midst of what it talks about in seven church eras, that everything comes down finally to this. That's why this story is like this. And it's brought out then even more so in Revelation about seven church eras and what the church would go through. But it all comes down to the end of it all, to the fulfillment of it all, to finally, after 2,000 years or 6,000 years, 2,000 years for the church, 6,000 years for man. And all of a sudden, God is excited. We're excited. The angelic realm is excited. Because finally, God's kingdom is about to come to the earth. And brethren, you become more and more excited, filled with greater boldness when these things begin to happen. It's going to be so strong in you, you have no concept yet how strong you're going to be able to be of what God is preparing you for. You truly will be. You know, we live our lives right now, and we live by faith, and we walk by faith, and sometimes we doubt our own lives, and some things we go through, and we have to go back to the trunk of the tree, and we cry out to God, and then He gives us more power of His Spirit, and it's so clear in our minds, and we have that encouragement He gives us from time to time. We have a Feast of Tabernacles like we had, and we have that excitement and that fullness of life for a short length of time, for just a few days. Brethren, I can't wait. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like to be a member of the God family. When all of a sudden you have the same mind, more so of things that God just, it's in your mind. You know what you're going to do when you return. You don't have to be told. People have to be told where their job is, what they're going to be doing. They know. Can you imagine it being your mind and you know everything you're supposed to do, what your function is, where you are in the temple of 144,000? It's not a matter which side was I supposed to be on, where at. You know, you just know. You know where you are in the family. It's in your mind. And you're excited and you're full of joy and fullness of life in a way we can't describe because we've never experienced that. Well, you're going to get a foretaste of that during the tribulation. You truly are. Because the boldness and the power of everything that God brings together and what He works around your lives and what He's working in the world, and the excitement God has. We can't even begin to understand the love and the might that God wants to pour out upon us at that time, brethren. He is so intent and intense about looking on this time. Can you imagine, in Jesus Christ, the excitement He has in being prepared and ready to come back after all this time and all the anticipation they've had? We haven't been around very long. Look at their anticipation, and now we're finally there. I can't grasp that, but it's becoming more exciting. You know why? Because God's pouring out more of His Spirit as we get closer to it. But once it starts happening, He's going to pour out His Spirit in such powerful ways, you're going to be dumbfounded. You truly are. You're just going to be dumbfounded. There's just no other way of describing it, because it has to be experienced. That's why I love the example of sackcloth. It won't be a matter of pride on anyone's part. If you're truly seeking God's way of life and fighting this fight and truly yielding yourself to the process, God will give you all the strength and help you need, and more so. He's been looking forward to this time for a long, long time. That's why those two are symbolic of the whole, of what we're called to do and be a part of. More will be done there because of what they're going to say and what they're going to do. But they're going to do it, all of us will do it with humility. Not a matter of haughtiness and pride. On the contrary, we're going to be sobered to the tip of our toes. We truly are. But all the nagging of anything maybe in the past you've ever experienced, of wanting to get on with it, of wondering how long it's going to be, or any doubt, it's going to be so erased from your mind, you're going to be so energized to go forward and go through all this. I feel it now. It's God's Spirit. An anticipation, a waiting. I just hope it starts soon, as you do. Hold on, it could. It could start as early as this January. You know, we thought maybe September, maybe October, maybe. 19 years, Mr. Armstrong's been dead of January. I think it must be a most beautiful, awesome thing as a part of God's plan of showing the two phases that God worked with him in that Mr. Armstrong knew full well. What an awesome thing if after the end of that, God would begin to show the world more powerfully, you did not receive the Elijah to come, and everything he said is now upon you. What would be more appropriate? It's been my prayer. Maybe God will hear it. Maybe he won't. Maybe he can begin doing some things then. I don't know. But we're getting close, and we know we're getting close. But maybe we have some more work to do that we just don't know yet, you know. But it's getting more exciting. It truly is. So again, here are some awesome things to understand, brethren. To have the symbolism way back then of what's in Revelation, of what we're a part of. Then said he, these are the two anointed ones that stand by the Lord, before the Lord, that are established by God, that are made to stand, that stand fast on the earth and do what they're going to do. I can't even begin to comprehend, brethren, can you? Control of weather, control of plagues. This one comes, now it goes. Like what Moses did, except far, far greater. Moses and Aaron. That's the world. That's when God begins to reveal himself to the world. Not just to a nation of people, so that some can be let loose and some can go out in the wilderness and begin a nation and do. But now, a change in time, a change in the whole world, because God's kingdom is about to come. Let's go back to the book. In the last sentence on page 43, and as it continues on into page 44. And if any man will hurt them, fire proceeds out of their mouth and devours their enemies. So again, they're not shooting fire out their mouth. You know, it's like the sackcloth thing. It's symbolism. There are certain things that are going to happen to people. There are certain things they're going to say, in some cases, and maybe even death to certain individuals. When they try to do harm to them, they'll turn it back on them. No, this harm will come on you. And so ever how they try to kill, they will die accordingly. Can God do that? Small thing for God. And if any man will hurt them, fire proceeds out of their mouth and devours their enemies. Brethren, that's what we're a part of. To understand and to know that God is with you so much so that people can't harm you unless it's God's time. And as a whole, the protection, the favor that God can grant, will grant. Those examples back in the Bible, brethren, are there for a reason. About Daniel, about what happened to Joseph, that God can give favor to a conquering army. He can give favor to his people because we'll stand out as different in a positive way, in a good way, because God will give the favor. Going on in the book, well, the rest of this verse here, Revelation 11, verse 5. It says, will come out of their mouth and devour their enemies, and if any man will hurt them, he must in this manner be killed. It's already stated how they're going to die. Someone try to kill you in a certain way, or come after you in a certain way, this is their destruction. This is exactly what will happen to them by God's words. Automatic. Going on in the book, many will hate these two with great passion. Many will desire to see them killed. Do you know the main ones that are going to hate them? The main ones are going to be the ones out of Europe, because it's going to start being a thorn in the flesh in a very powerful way, because everything they're saying keeps coming to pass, and everything they said about them keeps coming to pass, and things happen to them over there exactly the way they said it would, just like it happened in Egypt. And their hatred grows and grows and grows toward these two. Many will desire to see them killed, and some will even attempt to do so. But these have the power to inflict death upon those who attempt such a thing. This will happen often enough that it will begin to put fear in those who attempt to do so. You know, if you're told you have a job to do, go after them, go do it, and you're afraid because you saw what happened to those who went before you. It's kind of like when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, there were some of those who weren't all that excited about being the ones that have to take them up there. Not a good job to have. Going on in the book here. Revelation 11, verse 6. These have power, the Greek power and authority, to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over waters to turn them to blood, and to strike the earth with all plagues as often as they will. In the beginning, very few will believe these two are sent from God. But as time progresses through this 3.5-year period, people would be moved to believe it. They can then begin preparing themselves for what is yet to come, until the kingdom of God itself comes with the Messiah, the Christ, as King of Kings. But when end time events are ready to come to a close, just before Jesus Christ returns, some will fully succeed in killing these two witnesses. Going on and reading verse 7 here, Revelation 11. And when they have finished their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. Well, we know who that is. It's a power out of Europe, basically backed by Satan. Finally has a desire to come after them and to kill them, and succeeds. Now we come to a section of the chapter that's entitled The Seventh Seal of Revelation. I'm going to be doing a lot of reading here as we go along and commenting as we go, but the time for the coming of these two witnesses of God is revealed by the opening of the seventh seal of Revelation. The work of these two prophets of God will commence at the same time that the seventh seal of Revelation is opened. Six seals have already been opened at the time of this writing. Many religious scholars believe these first six seals concern literal physical events that will occur on the earth. But the end time will catch the world off guard, because the first six seals are not about the physical events. They are about spiritual ones. And I have to interject here. I wish I'd explain more of that, but because, and frankly, I don't even know that we even focused much upon some of that before, because I don't know that we even knew it at that point in time. I think we realize now some will have a spiritual impact, but some will have a physical impact, especially in understanding seven thunders. They may have, we don't know what they are yet. They may be some things that shake up some of the scattered church first. I don't know. Then again, it may be some physical things that help to do both. It may be because it's a transition of time, a period that goes from things that were on the church to more things that are going to happen in the world. We already saw with what happened symbolically with 9/11 that there's a transition in time during this particular seal. And so there still may be a combination of those things throughout this period of time. God hasn't revealed those things fully yet. We just know that's where we are in time. Going on, the opening of these seals has gone unnoticed by the world because they are about a small church that was prophesied to exist at the end time. The day of small things. Never been a big church. Isn't that amazing? That's why the world can look down upon it and scoff at it. That's why it doesn't pain any mind. Can't believe that they're, you know, that the church, I think of as the impact it finally came to having on radio and TV, more than any other religious program for a time, around the world. And all the Plain Truth magazines that were going out, but people still scoffed at it. You know, and in their minds, physically so, understandably so. Because in size, we were incredibly puny compared to them. So some church organizations, we would barely fill up what they might fill up in one state, let alone all 50. And some puny organizations, not let alone some of the big ones. So we were looked down upon. God says He's going to despise the day of small things. God's doing it. That's what it's all about. God's the one who accomplished it. God is the one who gave the ability to do that. I marvel. We ought to marvel that an organization as small as Worldwide was able to be on 300 television stations, right at 300 television stations, 300 radio stations at about the same time, with 8 million plain truths going out, all the other literature going out, all the ministry around the world, the church structure the way it was, to accomplish something like that so massively that other churches, if they were to see it from the organization of it, and some people did, marveled, wondered at it. How can this be? I can't help it when I think about what God has blessed this little group to do. You know, as small as what Toledo was by the time I'd resign. But we're about that same size, Worldwide. You know, it's laughable. And I think, what are we doing, though? I think to have the ability all of a sudden to be in advertising in different countries, full-page ads, which some large organizations, it's taken them a while before they started doing that, and they started doing it. They do it regularly now, you know. But I think of the difference in what we have compared to what they have and what God is doing. I marvel at that. There's something so puny and something so small. I go by a little church building and I think, you know, we could probably afford that, maybe. A little building in a little town, obscure, nobody's ever heard of. And that's the way we are. It's not going to be that way long. Awesome. What God will do when the time comes. So again here, the opening of the seals has gone unnoticed by the world because they are about a small church that was prophesied to exist at the end time. That church was to experience events on a spiritual plane unparalleled in history. Those prophecies have been fulfilled over the past decade and will be explained in another chapter. So that's why I marvel. If anybody reads some of that stuff, you know, until things start happening, can you understand how difficult it has to be for anyone, the human mind? You have to have some of God's help. I mean, not some of, but a beginning of some help from God to begin to see some things, because when God calls us out of the world, He gives us a lot of help to draw us on in the church. But we're going through a process here where there's a little bit of help being given on occasion here. But I marvel at the human mind of people to see something and to think, oh yeah, the seals of Revelation, right, they were about Worldwide. Sure. I mean, that's ludicrous to people who knew about Worldwide. And to those who didn't, it'd be like, what was Worldwide? I never even heard of Mr. Armstrong's name, although there are a lot who have. So again, the opening of the seventh seal will occur at the same time the end time witnesses begin their work. But during the time of the sixth seal, the end time tribulation is held back until the final number of those who are to become a part of God's kingdom at Christ's return is fulfilled. Over the past 6,000 years, God is preparing those He called, trained, and refined to become a part of His kingdom to reign with Jesus Christ when He returns. The last of those to be added to complete the whole count of 144,000 is determined during this period of time. God has not revealed how many during this specific time, and then parenthesis here, the opening of the sixth seal and its duration. So again, has not revealed how many during this specific time are yet to be added to complete the whole. It may be a handful, or perhaps a few hundred, but it's small. That's an amazing thing to understand too. It's not a lot. The Apostle John records what he saw during the time of the sixth seal, a time that must be fully accomplished before the seventh seal can be opened. And so we begin reading some of this then in Revelation 7. And after these things I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels, to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, until we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. And I heard the number of those that were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000. You know, I marvel at this. You know, unless God shows by His Spirit what is true, we can interpret things our own way. I understand why God never led us to understand fully what this meant, that we truly thought during Philadelphia that there would be 144,000 that would come out of Philadelphia. And then we had to be awakened. A part of that awakening was to realize there's no way on earth 144,000 will ever come out of that period of time. And not only that, but that period of time is long gone. It's over with. That work was accomplished and finished. And that's been hard. But see, that's the difference of being led by God's Spirit, drawn by God's Spirit, and whether or not we're tuned into God's Spirit or not. Going on. During the sixth seal, four angels are held back from what they will eventually unleash on the earth. But once the seventh seal is opened, specific catastrophic events begin. The opening of the seventh seal and the destruction that follows, when these four angels are released, mark the beginning of the end-time tribulation. As soon as 144,000 are sealed, and the work of 6,000 years finally completed, the seventh seal is opened. So basically, you know, that's what it's talking about. We're talking about 144,000 because that's the work of 6,000 years of those who are going to be part of God's kingdom. Then the tribulation can begin to make that transition from man's world to God's world. And it has to be done through a powerfully humbling process to humble mankind, to bring mankind down so that mankind will be of an attitude of mind to receive God's kingdom, finally. Because right now we can't. I think today I heard it was on Fox News, and I think it was Chirac. They were all upset with because he's come out basically and said something to the effect about Europe, and because the euro now is up to $1.30, that basically they're going to become much greater than the United States. Ooh, man, this guy was upset. Because they're to the right anyway on Fox. Even more so than maybe someone on the left would be, because someone on the left would... anyway. But this guy, he was... I think it was... Sean something?
Hannity.
Maybe it was Hannity. I don't know. Anyway, it was one of these guys. But they got some guy on there from Europe. Not too old of a fella. Looked like he's in his mid-30s, but he's written a book. And I wish I could remember the name of it now, but I can't. But basically, it was about Europe and the power of Europe. And so, whether Sean or whoever it was started talking, and he wasn't very happy with what was written in the book because it's basically about how Europe's going to become greater, you know, and more powerful. And he stopped him, right? It's the fellow over in Europe that wrote the book. He stopped him and he said, well, wait a minute. He said, what about, you know, he just rattled off several things about how Germany, and I didn't realize that, Germany exports more than the United States right now. Just one country, not the European Union, one country. Now, he didn't challenge him on that, so maybe it's true. I don't know. Shocked the tar out of me that one little nation like that's exporting more than what we are as a whole nation. And basically he said that it is a more powerful bloc right now than, and he'd mentioned several of the large corporations and so forth that have far more strength in Europe than they do over here. Anyway, just rattled off several things, and it was interesting, the attitude. It was a haughty attitude that struck back every time. It was like, no one's greater than us. He didn't say that, but that was the attitude. Who do you think you are over there in Europe? To feel that way, to be that way toward the United States, you know, you're just dead wrong. And, you know, basically it was like a pouting child that was filled with a bit of a rage, you know, for someone to be, how can you be so audacious, you know, so that's incredibly presumptuous. But isn't that amazing? That's exactly what's taking place. But what's it going to take for us to finally be humble? We are so filled with pride in this country. We, in our minds, are the greatest, and you can see the struggle and why there is no other way and why God is going to do it this way and why this nation is going to start with this nation, because Europe has to be humble too. Everybody has to be, every country has to be humble before it's over with to receive the kingdom of God. But it's a marvel to me sometimes when you see that display of human nature and how strong the pride is in the human mind. It is so deep-rooted, and I think God's letting us see more and more of that so that we can understand there is no other way for the kingdom of God to be ushered in. Then the world has to go through this. And what a crazy world we live in. Even the news, even the things you see anymore. What is it, the special they're coming out with? I believe it's next week. I can't remember who is doing it, but it was being advertised about how much we're hated in the world. And the question basically being asked, are we headed for a global conflict because of this? Yeah, hello. That's exactly what it is. We are hated around the world more and more. Now, I'll just give you an example when I travel. Because of that sense of some of those things, I far rather travel to Australia and New Zealand and Canada. It's getting tougher, and I don't mean anything towards some of the Europeans over there, but the reality is for Americans, it's not as safe over there anymore. And because, you know, you detect attitudes. There's a big difference in attitude towards Americans between Antwerp and Brussels. Brussels is just a little bit closer to France. It truly is, even mentality and how they think about Americans. And so the world is changing, and that part of the world is changing. Germany and France, very powerfully so, and having a tremendous effect on the rest of the world, how they think about us. And there's a spirit behind it all. Just like what happened in World War II, a spirit that's preparing people for something. So it's just not unleashed yet. It's not time for it yet. I think I stopped. Yes, I think we're ready for reading the verses in Revelation 8 and verse 1, the first paragraph, page 46. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. This is the beginning. This will be the beginning then of the, when the seventh seal is open, these seven trumpets are to blare out. So it goes on to say here, each angel blows a trumpet to announce specific events to be unleashed upon the earth during this 3.5-year period of great tribulation. Then going on, reading Revelation 8 and verse 3. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hands. And the angel took the censer and filled it with fire on the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and earthquake. And the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. And this is an incredible time. Finally. Such an incredible time. And I love the symbolism that's here because of the incense. Incense is, we've always understood, brethren, to be symbolic of the prayers of God's people. And this is summarizing it, 6,000 years of struggle and prayer and a relationship that people have been able to have with God Almighty. And finally, all who are going to be a part of those who were called for the purpose they were called, to become a part of God's government, a part of 144,000, all those prayers now, and now we're there. And now it can take place because they're sealed. And so now this event can take place, this last 3.5 years. And so those seven angels are ready to do what they must do. Going on in the book. The first plague upon the earth is described by the blowing of the first trumpet. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood. And they were cast upon the earth. And the third part of the trees was burned up, and all the grass was burned up. Famine, death and destruction are thrust upon the earth in unimaginable proportions. On its heels is the sounding of the next trumpet. Then the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the living creatures which were in the sea died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. The result of the first trumpet is destruction on the land masses, while the second trumpet resulted in the in like devastation in the seas and oceans. And you know something we don't know yet? Is this something primarily that happens to the scattered nations of Israel? Affects them the most? Is it a third of all them? Or is it a third of the world? God hasn't specifically said yet. And because of the timing of events, and because of what happens in the fifth trumpet, it seems as though, and God just hasn't said specifically yet, shown specifically yet, but definitely will be over all of Israel. Definitely. If it's all the earth, it'll be far greater. But the likelihood, brethren, of all things right now, it's over the scattered nations of Israel. First paragraph on page 47, continuing with the verses. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the springs of water. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became Wormwood. And many men died of the water because it was made bitter. You know, brother, when things like this happen, you rely on God. God is the only one that can protect people, that can bring people through this. What do you do to prepare for it? There are some things, perhaps, in life that we could do, you know, but you're very limited, and it's going to be for a very limited time. There's not a whole lot in that respect. There's just maybe a little bit here and there to ease some things, but as a whole, you really can't. It really is a dependence upon God and the favor God's going to give. So, you know, if there are some things that some people can do, a little here, you know, it's not a It's not like what they did during Y2K, although there are some things even in that that is not the craziness that went along with that, but, you know, there's a matter of wisdom too, so everybody has to ask God, because, you know, what happens in one part of the country may not happen in another. You don't know. I wouldn't want to live in New York City or Houston or Los Angeles or Chicago right now, quite candidly. It's a quick way to have things over with quickly, I guess. But some of those cities, brethren, they're going to fall. So you rely on God to go where you go, to do what you do, and therein is your answer. And God will work with you accordingly. Going on. It is not yet understood what these specific events entail, but it's clear that during this third trumpet blast, massive resources of drinkable water are contaminated and hundreds of thousands of people die as a result. Then the last of these four angels blows his trumpet, and the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. So again, they're not struck. The stars aren't struck by something. The sun isn't struck by something. It's something that happens in our atmosphere is why this happens. In other words, that which you can't see, that's why it's darkened, because from your vantage point, everything is from the vantage point of man on earth. And so it goes on to say, so as a third part of them was darkened. Well, the third part of the sun isn't literally going to become darkened, but over a third part of the earth, because of what takes place, when things are cast up into the atmosphere, even a nuclear weapon or a volcano, different things can throw things up in the atmosphere. So when things get bad enough, like what's being described here, it's going to be bad. It's like things with a nuclear winter or whatever kind of winter it is. Anything that cuts off the flow of the sun to the earth is not a good thing. And so there's going to be a lot of suffering during this period of time. That's why you have to rely and depend upon God. You look to God to protect you, to provide for you, to give you everything through this entire time, brethren. So as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shined not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. 3.5 years sometimes can seem like a long time, but I think back 3.5 years and it hasn't been too long. So things are a matter of perspective, but at least we know how long it is. And we can give that hope to others. Do you realize when people have no hope and they don't know the truth and all of a sudden they begin to understand it and they realize, well, there are only 3 more years to go now? Because you'll know. You'll be able to tell them. It's not a mystery anymore. God has removed the mystery when the first trumpet is blown. We know exactly when the two witnesses begin that it's going to be exactly 3.5 years plus, 3.5 days. So there are things you can know. There are things you will know. And same thing here, when the first trumpet is blown, you're going to know. It's not going to be a mystery anymore how long it's going to be before God's kingdom comes. And we're blessed to be able to share this with others and to tell them, to give them hope. There's nothing better, brethren, in that respect during a time of war or cataclysm to be able to tell people, this is why, and this is how much longer, and this is what will be at the end. Hold on to the end. Fight for the end. It's worth the fight. It's exciting. The return of Jesus Christ. A new world. A world made perfect compared to what man has done as far as a way of life to live and so forth. So again here, the result of these plagues is a darkening of the atmosphere over a third of the earth, or at least a third of Israel, brethren, where that part of the earth, depending on specifically how God intends us. The light of the heavens is restricted from shining on the earth. This affects weather, especially the rapid cooling of the earth, so much so that much more death and suffering comes upon this world. The horrifying results of this tribulation are of a magnitude that is unpleasant to contemplate and almost impossible to imagine, but all of it will happen just as God has said. This devastation comes primarily upon the United States, Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, and a few of the very northwestern countries of Europe. God has much to say about these modern-day nations and the intense magnitude of their devastation during this soon-coming end time. The purpose of this book is not to convince anyone of such things, but declare them before they happen, so that when they do occur, you can recognize them and prepare yourself accordingly for what is to follow. That's what it is. It is what it is. And if people will receive it, then they can begin to have help in their life. If they'll begin to accept and begin to change their life, then they can have help. God makes it clear that most people will not believe these things are going to happen until they actually begin to unfold. That's why we realize when we there's a radio interview or whatever, they can't help. They can't believe it. It's too far out for them as a whole. It truly is, until it starts happening. And even then, going on the book, there will only be a regrettably small percentage who do. That's why it has to be wave after wave after wave after wave. That's why it talks about seven thunders. A thunder and a thunder and a thunder. And then finally, brethren, even after all of that, it hasn't made too great of a ripple in the scheme of things. And then finally, what we're talking about here, the seventh seal. But as these prophesied events continue to come to pass, the number of those who begin to believe will increase. Those who stubbornly refuse to believe will only increase the likelihood of their own demise. While describing these primarily English-speaking nations, it might as well be shown how vast their destruction will become over the entire period of end-time tribulation. This was covered in part in the beginning of this chapter. The prophet Ezekiel was given prophecy concerning these nations and their end-time demise. And so this is quoting from Ezekiel 5, verses 11 through 15. Wherefore, as I live, says the Lord Eternal, surely, because you have defiled my sanctuary with all your detestable things and with all your abominations, therefore will I also diminish you. Neither shall my eye spare, neither will I have any pity. A third part of you shall die by the pestilence, and with famine shall they be consumed in the midst of you. And a third part shall fall by the sword round about you. And I will scatter a third part into all the winds, and I will draw out a sword after them. You know, brethren, it fits exactly with what God says is going to take place to the scattered nations of Israel. It is a duality here of what happened to the church spiritually. It is a duality with what's happened, with what will happen physically. Thus shall my anger be accomplished, and I will cause my fury to rest upon them, and I will be comforted, and they shall know that I, the Eternal, have spoken it in my zeal, when I have accomplished my fury in them. And so God is showing here, it is through this method and through this process that people can begin to believe. It's sad that pride is so strong like that, that it would take this so that people can believe and know that God is God. Moreover, I will make you waste and a reproach among the nations that are round about you, in the sight of all who pass by. Europe, they're going to think they're doing us a favor when they step in. It's not going to be like World War II and the Nazis and their Blitzkrieg wars. It's not going to be like some lunatic who is ranting and raving. On the contrary, just like they do today, they're going to agree it's the right thing to do, that they have to step in, take control, and if so be, you know, by military, because it's for our good, it's for the good and security of the world. They feel that weight upon them. There are some who want that weight anyway, say it's just working into their hands. There are some who want to exercise power on the earth. That attitude is still there, that mind is still there, and it's stirred up by a spirit being. And so they will come out as though it's on justifiable grounds. It's a righteous thing for them to do what they're going to do, they think. That's how they appease their minds to do what they do.